Today on Talk About That, John gives a history lesson about the president who locked up his critics and gets some new pen pals for his birthday. Meanwhile, I ponder freedom of speech and hypersensitivity in comedy and elsewhere. Also, a conversation about negativity and whether people can become more positive or are just wired one way or the other. Today's episode is not sponsored by Allo Govna, the British treatment for sunburns. Happy New Year.
It's a new year, Johnny. A new you. Don't talk about that.
It's not.
It's not a new you?
No. I don't think it's the same old me.
You know, I always, as pastors have this time of year, is like this weird time. Someone already asked me, like, so what's your new series going to be about? Like, new year, new you. Like, you know, there's
New Year's revolution.
Oh. And I fought it. Like, I am preaching Sunday on January the 2nd.
Okay.
And which this will come out January 3rd. But, and you know, I'm kind of
great
like.
Great sermon, by the way.
You did
a great job.
Oh, thank you so much. I worked so hard. I'm kind of railing back. I'm fighting back against the counterculture, against New Year's resolution sermons.
So you're going against the backlash.
Right. The backlash is every
don't
year.
Don't set goals because you're not going to meet them. Right.
The pastor's all, well, here we go again. Another now it's a new opportunity for your life. And, you know, and it's like, hey, you know what? It is a new opportunity for your life. Like, this is one of those, you should be doing that all the time.
That's not anti-revolution. That's not anti-resolution. That's just saying, like, when pastors take advantage of, like, a moment in the zeitgeist to kind of, like, well, it's almost whatever. We need to take advantage of this moment, and let's preach a sermon on it. People roll their eyes like, oh, of course, here we go. We're going to get encouraged. It's like, yeah, we need to be encouraged.
Yeah, no kidding. Have you seen yourselves? I don't know if you know, the world's kind of falling apart.
Yeah.
I'm taking New Year's as it now. I am overwhelmed right now in my mind by all the things I think I need to do to make myself a better person in 2022.
I read a thing today, and it was a tweet about, it said something to the idea of don't set resolution. If you set resolutions that are based on like a goal, when you reach that goal, you lose steam. But when you set like a resolution about like becoming who you really are, like I'm not, in other words, like if I go, I need to lose weight. Well, when I lose that weight, I have this like moment,
right.
Or I get discouraged when I don't reach that number and I give up. But if I just go like, I'm tired of being I don't feel like a fat person. I feel like I'm, you know, this is like an imposter that I'm walking around. I need to become my best self. Then that if you think it's part of your identity, it's easier for you to maintain a goal. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's true. I really try. You know me.
You're trying to unlock a side of yourself that is better versus I want to train and, you know, lose 20 pounds. And then when you lose the 20 pounds, you're like, whew, well, I did that. What's next? And then you just whatever.
I've done it now enough times at my age that now, because that happens.
It's harder, though, the older you get. If you're talking about weight loss, which everybody, you know, tries to lose weight.
Weight loss, but I think there were times in life where I was like, I felt healthier being in control of that as a norm.
Yeah.
That was a good feeling that I didn't have to sit down at the meal and go, oh, I have to eat this entire quarter pounder and all the fries. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, I don't have to do that. Like when you get back in control of, I don't have to do that.
Right.
It's okay. I've had those before. I've tasted them before. I don't have to have every single bit of it again. There's those sort of subtle lies inside of you. And the food's just one example. Same thing for me spiritually right now. I need encouragement. I can tell that like one of my goals for 2022 is to continually access the places of my spiritual life where joy is produced, because that is, I feel like, a fruit that's lacking in me for whatever reason in the last year to two. And that may sound like, well, of course it is. But I'm kind of like, hey guys, the whole point of the gospel is I'm supposed to be joyful in all circumstances. So I find it in pockets, but I would like to pursue the things that allow me to not lose it so easily also in the circumstances of day to day. So that's – but how do you know when you have joy, Johnny? And can you say joy without going, Joey?
Jesus others you, John.
Oh, my goodness. You know what I was thinking of the other day? I've never told you this before. My great uncle, who was a preacher, he would preach on the way to pray is through Acts, like the book of the Bible.
Hold on a second.
Here we go.
Ask?
No, that's not where you begin, John. If you begin by asking, God can't honor.
What's the A? Adore, adoration.
There you go. Okay. A, adoration. This one should be the easiest one. C.
call.
Call him up. Tell him what you want.
Place a call to the Lord.
Confession.
Confession.
So that's getting rid of the, Johnny, you got to get rid of the sin.
Okay.
And then T, come on.
I don't know.
Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And then S, this is the harder one.
Supplication.
You got the two hard ones.
I knew the Christianese word. Let us make supplication, shall we?
And I kind of like roll my eyes at that. The other day I was thinking, you know what? That's actually not a bad, still not a bad little acronym. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
It works, I suppose, but I don't know. How do you feel about formalizing spiritual things? Like, do you... I think
like
we get
mnemonic
too far.
Devices.
Yeah, like how do you think it's like, oh man, that's,
yeah.
I roll my eyes at that, but then I go, there's a reason we do that, because it's just reminders,
right?
Just, you know, reminders. I don't know.
I guess. Oh yeah, I think it'd be cooler if it spelled out something that wasn't also a biblical word.
Yeah,
you know? Like what? Cars. Just like they didn't have cars in the Bible, but yeah, that's my prayer mnemonic device. I cast my cares on Him.
I ask
for forgiveness.
And I remember how good He is.
And then supplication.
The last one's just...
last one's always supplication.
Yeah, always supplication.
It always has to be a plural word.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm finding myself becoming more cynical about my cynicism.
Okay.
Like I'm going, wait a second.
It's a backlash against cynicism.
I'm backlashing...
Maybe the whole culture will do that.
I'm like, maybe I'm being too cynical about this. Maybe I should question that.
I think that I'm interested to see what will happen with, I was thinking about political correctness or over, you know, like hypersensitivity to things, or being offended on behalf of other people, which is like a real thing,
right?
You know, that I see in comedy. Like if you have a joke about race, not a racist joke, but it's just about race.
Yeah.
You see, if you're in a room of white people, you get a totally different reaction than if you're in a room with, that's a diverse crowd.
Yeah.
I have a comedian friend, Brian Bates, and he does a joke about being like a super white guy or whatever. And I can't remember what the exact bit is, but if he does it in a room with no black people in it, it goes very differently. It's very tight.
Yeah.
Because white people get offended on behalf of black people. And I wonder, all that said, I wonder if there's going to be a backlash against that backlash, against that sensitivity. And I don't want the pendulum to swing all the other way. I've talked about this before, that I do believe that there are certain jokes that are just like, they're tired. Like old, you know, racial tropes that were in comedy acts in
right.
the 70s and 80s. Like, they needed to go away. They're just tired now. It's not just a matter of like, that offends me to my core. No, it's just, it's not funny anymore.
Right.
But I do think that, like, it'd be interesting to see. I wasn't counting on that sound.
There's a party happening next door. That's not a euphemism. And we were like, oh, we won't hear it.
Yeah,
and someone just drug a table across the floor for about 30 seconds.
I have a feeling they heard that. It was like the chair in Men in Black when he scoots the chair over to take the test or scoots the table over.
I'm just going to leave this because I want to see if it shows up in the recording. Sorry, go ahead.
Anyway, I'm just interested to see, and I'm not one of those guys, because political correctness is one of those things that it's become a word that just means what you want it to mean.
Right.
Like, we're so politically incorrect, I can't make my horrible joke anymore. And you're just like, no, that joke needed to go away. But I'm interested to see, like, the hypersensitivity on behalf of other people who would not be offended if they were here. I'm interested to see if there's a backlash against that where we go, what are we doing? We're throwing away. Like, because we're here's what's happening now. We got so sensitive as in the Christian culture, we put, you know, warning labels and everything, and we had, like, our own version of, we had our own counterculture.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
And so... now censorship has come to get us. Like, I really feel like there's a censorship has just like come to bite us, like the snake ate its own tail kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see like if that happens on the other side where we're like, oh, what are we doing? Because it's like now you see people on the far right, they're burning books.
Like, yeah.
They're getting rid of books in libraries because they might have like a thing in history that makes us all look bad. So we're like, well, we know we can't have that. It's like, that's what Hitler did.
Yeah.
Like, what are we going to shake ourselves and go, like, it's words. Like, what are we doing?
I think that there's a cycle, interestingly enough. I'm sure you've heard of the Alien and Sedition Acts that happened in the... the late 18th century.
Sedition could be the S, too, on the end of the... No.
Sedition, yeah. But interestingly enough, like, when John Adams was president...
Yeah.
Somebody...
Wait, we all remember it.
Right. I mean, it was like it was yesterday. And he was sort of a he was sort of a temperamental guy. Like he would just, it was constantly, he was outraged all the time. Like he was really known for these sort of tantrums in office with his staff. And
I would be as a president. I'd be known for my tantrums.
And Adams, somebody wrote some bad stuff about him and like they went to jail for like 6 months because the Alien and Sedition Acts were passed at a time. Again, it was.
Talk about a snowflake.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? Like we talk about like, oh, well, you're so like sensitive, but good grief. I think I'd just be known as a president that cried a lot. Megan, he cried
good
a lot.
Gosh, what was the deal?
He just broke down.
I've ever told you this. I've probably not told you this story. My niece, who is now 21, just graduated college with her MBA. And so Kendall, my niece, when she was real little, they were in church and they kept talking about Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ. And she was probably two.
Yeah.
Of course she didn't have a low volume. 2-year-olds don't have a low volume. So she goes, of course she's super country as well. Little kids in Cookeville, you know. So my kids sound super country too, not just Cookeville, but she just piped up in the middle of the service and goes, Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ, Jesus Christ. What's Jesus crying about? What's he so sad about? So she just starts like this whole diatribe and the whole congregation just lost it, you know. So every time I hear someone.
Wow, she thought Jesus was crying.
Jesus cries. What's the deal?
Anyway. In a way, in a manger, he's not supposed to cry. That's how we've like.
No crying he makes.
No crying he makes. Like that makes Jesus more holy because he didn't cry as a baby. I never understood that line.
I know that people love Little Drummer Boy, and I know lots of jokes and memes and things are made about it, but it really is the most ridiculous song ever written. I can't. The ox and lamb kept time, Johnny.
Oh, did they? I think a drummer wrote that song for sure.
it had to be.
Drummers traditionally feel very unappreciated.
Yeah.
It's one of the things, like, if you take up drums, you need another, like, you need accompaniment, generally. You don't just go in and drum somewhere. So I think a drummer was just like, oh, yeah, I drummed for Jesus. Like, he made this narrative where, you know, it's like a fantasy.
And Mary allowed it.
Right.
And the baby smiled, a newborn, and the animals kept time with it. And I just...
It's like a little band.
I can't
figure
out what we love about this song. Like, I can't figure out why the logic of it doesn't cause us to go, wait a second. I mean, I don't know.
I think it was it's like the widow's mite. It was his only gift.
Yeah.
Was just clanging on stuff.
Yeah, I do like the one line of the whole song.
I'm a poor boy too.
That one does get me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the gospel right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
That maybe there was a little boy who, identified with Jesus because he came to identify with him.
Mm-hmm.
And with you, Johnny, and with you, listener, and that's our show.
Okay, so we go back to John Adams.
Sorry. John Adams. And so
that was a really long rabbit trail for us.
It was, yeah.
We ended up at Little Drummer Boy from John Adams.
But back then, you could during the time where those part of the deal was is we raised our first standing army under Alexander Hamilton.
Okay,
who was a general, the Inspector General.
I've heard about him from the play.
And And Washington was actually the commander of the... So after the presidency, Washington was actually the commanding general of the new standing army. There was no standing army.
Okay.
Like during peacetime. But because the French Revolution and Napoleon and all the things were happening, there was this great fear that we were going to be attacked by the French.
Well-founded fear.
Right. And Jefferson and Madison, all those guys, were French sympathizers. And so that was the huge, like, the two political parties that had not yet emerged quite... Wow. Were divided between North and South, Federalist Republicans. I mean, they were parties officially, but Federalist Republicans. And the Republicans sided with France and the French Revolution, and the Federalists were against it. They sided with England, and they didn't want us to divide ourselves into a European war. So, but understand, during the middle of that, they passed these laws over the very thing. Is back to that whole question of will this cycle? Yes, it will cycle.
Yeah.
So they said, hey, this is too much, you know, because there were so many newspapers out there that were completely partisan.
Right.
And just making
printing disinformation.
Just complete misinformation left and right.
Right.
And so they were like, hey, if you do that, you know, if you speak ill of someone without evidence, basically, then that could be illegal now because it's threatening national security.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but eventually, obviously, those go against the Bill of Rights written by Madison.
Freedom of the press.
So the absolute just tension.
The freedom to editorialize against the president versus the president's right not to have lies printed about him that could cause a revolution.
Yeah.
Because, like, we know this from January 6th. If you believe it,
yep,
enough people, all it takes is enough people to believe something, and they'll just go,
yep,
they'll think that it's the end of the world, and they got to go do this. They'll think it's their, you know, it's their duty.
Somebody sent me, and I'll just be very vague, somebody sent me an article this week from the CDC.
Yeah.
Saying that masks don't work. Mm-hmm. And the URL was like www.nc.cdc.gov.
Okay. North Carolina.
I don't know what it was.
No,
but, they had taken even this. It was a spoof website.
Not CDC.
That's really, it might as well be. And they had taken, like, that when you, I put the two websites side by side.
Right. Yeah.
They had taken the header, the whole thing,
uh-huh,
all the disclaimers. But you go, okay, shouldn't that be illegal? Because this person,
right,
and how many times did that spread?
It's like, I want that to be wrong. I want that to be illegal, and yet I don't know where that it goes. If you make that kind of thing illegal, where does it lead?
Exactly. It has to cycle,
it's like
though,
what happened on Facebook with all the disinformation and the surrounding stories about the election and all the things. It's like, even in 2016, you know, when we think there might have been whatever, Russian involvement or whatever, and, you know, our enemies, other countries were like, you know, Trojan horses in here. Like,
right,
you want that to stop, but you go, but then, like, where does it end? It's a really, like you said, it's a very tough tension that we have to live in.
Right. I don't think you should make it illegal, but I do think you should make it maybe.
It's like they won't print the retraction on page one when it is wrong.
Right.
That's the sucky part.
That's what I'm saying. It's not a victimless crime.
People can still go, yeah, but I read an article. So that's, they base a belief on it, and then the belief becomes so rigid that even when you show them that the underlying reason for that belief was wrong, the belief is so set now.
It's now set.
Yeah. That sucks.
Yeah. I mean,
and I think we all have those things probably. We have those internal biases that, you know, you might have gotten. I mean, we've talked about that, you know, growing up in fundamentalism. It's like some of those things, there was a good intent even, and there's like a kernel of truth in them.
Yeah.
But because now you look back and there's so much rotten around it, you go, you're having to, like, second guess all. It's weird.
I'm reading a book called Live No Lies by John Mark Comer. It's a huge book right now, and I'm not going to quote him exactly because I don't remember the exact quote. But he basically defines a lie, as a good lie at least,
mm-hmm,
as like taking 10% of the truth and making it the whole truth.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's really, a good lie always has a,
right,
lot of truth.
That's kind
in
of what
it.
Propaganda is.
Yeah.
It's like a half truth. You know, or,
yeah,
less, and you twist it.
You make it now the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, this is the whole thing. You take out the context of the rest,
right,
of it. It's
or
exactly
like majoring on the minors. We've talked about before, like how sometimes we major on the minors.
Yeah.
You know, you take something that's like, should be, yeah, it's part of the story. No, it's the whole story.
Right. It's taking part of the story and making it the whole story.
Right.
I mean, it's the whole, again, it's the Garden of Eden. It's the, did God say you should eat that fruit? Yeah, God did say I shouldn't eat that fruit. Okay. So that part was true.
Mm-hmm.
He did. He took the major thing. Okay, but then you start adding to it. Well, what God didn't say. You get into all of those,
yeah,
things. That's a big question for me always. Like, I was having a conversation with someone biblically about some issues the other day. And I said, look, what gets me on this is not what the Bible says. It's what the Bible doesn't say that we're implying. Like, or history doesn't say.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to take this viewpoint towards this particular issue, if we look back and see that the second century church didn't take that viewpoint, and we can say that these words are translatable into English into different things in the way we translate them from the original languages. I'm down for that. But the people who knew what the translations meant, we have no record of them,
right,
translating them in the way that we're trying to do in the modern age.
Right.
So you're saying, oh, yeah, this could have meant this, this, and this. Great. But for the history that we have of the church, it didn't mean that to the people who this,
right,
wasn't 2,000 years removed.
Yeah.
And so it's what they didn't say. We don't have record that they did interpret it this way that I think also speaks into the narrative a little bit of how we reinterpret things today. So, yes, patriarchy and a lot of things. I mean, the Middle Ages and the Crusades and there's all kinds of abuses, absolutely, of the scriptures over time, American slavery, such abuses to it. But if we look back, though, at those who were not far removed from what it would have meant to them, how did they interpret this? I think,
yeah,
that's at least has to be a variable. It has to be the only variable, but a variable into the equation of how we take a look at modern, through modern eyes, at ancient things. So,
John,
wow.
It's beautiful. So I got you a present.
But it's just a hard turn into the
well,
present.
Well, no, the reason I wanted to, because we talk about it, how we look at through ancient eyes and all that stuff. So there's a box on your desk. That is your birthday present. But I got you a Christmas present too.
You always get
one present, and it's like, every Christmas and birthday. We talked about that. I don't want to do that this year. So I got you a Christmas present.
That's also a birthday present.
No, I got you a Christmas present, and then Oxford, a birthday present as well.
And they're both in that box?
No. I'm going to send you what I got you because it'll be arriving soon. I'm going to send you, and you can read it, what it is. Hold on. Stand by, John. This is going to be
good.
Guys,
this is happening in real time.
It is. It's okay. This is why we need a producer probably, but...
No. You'd lose the whole feel of this.
You don't want to... Okay, look at your phone. I'm going to send you a...
Okay.
And you got to read what this is.
Is it a text or an email?
It's a link. And then just go to the site.
Is it a text or an email?
Okay, oh, it's a text. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. The number. Okay.
Yeah. So open it up, and this is. I think this is right. This is if there ever was a. John's one of those guys. By the way, listeners, that you can't get for anything for him because he's the man who has everything.
Wow.
But this is the thing. I knew there's no way John would either buy this for himself. He's probably never heard of it.
I've never heard of it.
And this is the perfect gift for John. And I even asked Laura. I go, John, do you think? I said, Laura, do you think this would be okay for John? She's like, you got to get this. It's perfect.
Okay. Is this Christmas or birthday?
This is Christmas. Your birthday is in the box.
Okay. Because I didn't get you anything.
I think. I can't remember.
I didn't get you anything for Christmas. We don't do that every year.
And my birthday is not till June, so.
I usually get you something for your birthday.
It's fine. It's usually one of the books you wrote.
Here's a signed copy. How about for Christmas?
Yeah.
Because we're going to go watch the game today.
This is not about trying to outdo each other. I just wanted to be thoughtful this year.
Yeah, but that means I'm not thoughtful.
So just tell the listeners what it is. They're not a sponsor, but I think it's such a cool thing.
It's called Letter Joy.
Letter Joy.
Give the gift of weekly historic letters from figures like Benjamin Franklin, Clara Barton, and George S. Patton. Timely topics receive monthly themes including Supreme Court battles, birth of the automobile, and Civil War spies. Each week's letter explores the month's theme from a new angle, a classic experience featuring fine cotton paper or parchment and a real stamp.
Yeah.
An experience that iPhones can't match. Wow, interesting. The context to dig deeper. Every Letter Joy letter comes with background information to contextualize it and to help you explore important events from a new angle. I am freaking out about this.
It's so cool. So, like, and it's something you can, like, do with Sadie, too, because she can learn about history this way.
Wow.
So you get these real letters, and they're real letters from history.
Wow.
And you get one every week.
Primary focus is American history, 1600 to 1960.
We call that the John Driver era. Let's wrap your alley, bro.
It's true. Those are the
John Driver years.
I am.
It's very exciting,
Johnny. I'm very,
so
very
I
excited.
Signed you, I got you 6 months.
Wow.
So
that's
a lot of letters.
It's a lot of letters. It's a lot of money too. I'm looking at that price.
It's fine.
Here.
And so you're gonna get. So you can make a little scrapbook, maybe. I don't know what you want to do. I'll keep them.
I'll keep a folder.
Yeah, keep a little folder.
A little folder.
I want to slip in like a letter of my own just to mix it up, you know.
This is from me from the future, like a Dwight thing. Yeah, like starting. Yeah. Well, thanks, Johnny.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm moved and highly pleased. And you know, the thing is, one of the things that I'm going to be doing in the new year, because I know we're teasing, we're going to add a video element probably by February. But the other thing I'm probably going to do is start writing a weekly newsletter. /blog.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, kind of thing. And so that'd be an interesting thing because I'm always looking for topics I'm going to write about.
Like, there you go.
Imagine that. Like, I just.
But we're not going to send weekly letters to people with stamps and things.
No.
People don't do that anymore.
You'll have to subscribe.
That'd be something.
Once I have the. You already shot down my first name of it, the first brand.
I'm sorry.
The Algorithm in Blues. So. All right, so I have to open this other box too.
Gotta open the other box.
This is embarrassing because again, I have you nothing,
John. It's not about that.
It is about that.
Okay,
you know, do you understand how loyalists were?
We all know how great of a year I had, and all entertainers had.
Look, I don't have a knife. I don't have a knife.
Maybe it'll just peel.
Okay, guys, this is happening. I'm unboxing while I talk in the microphone.
This person is not a sponsor, but is a dear friend. And we've talked about him before on the show, and I've had this for you for months and months, but I was saving it.
It's quite
for your.
It's got a lot of packing.
Birthday / Christmas.
Okay.
So this is my friend Larry Marshall with Foothills Collectives, who makes repurposed lamps.
Nice.
And so, yeah, this is one of his It's one of his paint can lamps.
Paint can lamp. It's a UT, too.
It's a little quart paint can.
Wow.
And it's a touch lamp with a little Edison bulb on it.
Wow.
And so go to Foothills Collective.
Yeah.
On Instagram or whatever. And I can't remember his Etsy store
wow.
name, but you can search him on Etsy, Foothills Collective. And part of his proceeds go to support missions work. So he's a great guy and a tremendous guy. So
I'm taking.
It's weird to make it's kind of a design choice when you give somebody a lamp. So I know that you and Laura have a very specific style. So you don't have to feel like you got to put the lamp at some place of honor in your home.
Well,
but I think it's pretty cool.
I think it's an office lamp.
Yeah, maybe that's where
I'm here a lot right now. So I will enjoy it.
I like it's a 3-way touch lamp. So every time you touch the can, it gets brighter or dimmer or whatever. So yeah, I think you'll dig it. Anyway, Foothills Collective, not a sponsor, but a dear friend. And I've bought many, many lamps. From
unbelievable,
him
man.
Over the years, and he's a good guy.
I'm taking pictures right now. I'll have to post to socials.
Well, you got to plug it in and light it up if you're going to post a real picture of it. You got to light that thing up. Anyway,
I'll have to find a.
We're off track because we did like an opening thing on a radio show. No one can see.
Again, this is why we need to have the video component.
It's true.
Could you imagine how excited people would be right now
to see a lamp work?
Yeah. I love it, Johnny. Thank you so much, man. Wow. Do you know how old I am? That's the question.
You are 42 years old.
43. I thought I was 42 as well. But my
wife, so I knew you were 5 years behind me, but I guess you're 4.5 years behind me.
Yeah. My wife reminded me.
4 years.
I thought I was going to be 42, and I lost a whole year there.
Your mom had to remind you.
No, my wife had to remind me, yeah. And so the truth is I am 43, and so I don't know what 43 doesn't have, 45 feels like it has significance, you know, but now
it doesn't. I can tell you
it doesn't at all.
It does not.
Nothing changed. Yeah.
I think it has significance to people on the outside. It's how you feel, John.
Well, I hope that's not the case.
That's not helping.
No,
there was an old Seinfeld where, George breaks up with somebody, I think. And then Seinfeld said something like, well, the best revenge is living well. And he goes, well, there's no chance of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, it's how you, you're only as old as you feel, and that's not a big help.
Well, again, I just don't want to be those people that speaks as if I'm old.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem.
Well, when you say you feel old around someone who's in their 60s, then they just look at you like
why are you?
You're an idiot.
Yeah. Well, my grandmother is 89. And she's slowing down a bit after my pawpaw passed, you know, but still though, there's a spunk to her.
Yeah.
That probably gets her into trouble as well.
I want to have a spunk. Yeah.
But yeah, I look at that spunk and go, man, I want to have that sort of drive, you know, you're not taking me down, life. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's a real,
there's a difference though. You want to have a sassy old age without being a grouch.
Right.
Or just a problem. You don't want to be able to I don't know. There's an interesting thing.
I don't know how I'm going to strike that balance.
Fine line. Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be trouble for Sadie when I'm old, but then I also want to be the person who is still kicking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's probably going to cause her trouble. So
I think you're going to be a problem.
You think it's going to happen probably.
Yeah.
See, I hate being trouble for people. I hate that idea.
Yeah, but that's pride, right?
Oh, it's absolutely. Well,
because you're like, I don't want to be a burden.
I don't know if it's pride or if it's one, I know I have an only.
Because you want to be able to fend for yourself. And so you don't want, in other words, you don't want to accept care from other people. And that's pride because you want to be able to be self-sustaining.
I don't know if it's that.
I see a lot of sin in what you're talking about.
I'm sure you do.
Let's talk about it.
I think for me, she doesn't have any siblings to share the burden with, kind of thing. So part of me is like, hey, you know, yes, you can take care of me. Also, I'm going to try to put away if I can for this, you know, long-term care or whatever.
I'm going to be no help. You'll outlive me. So
Johnny,
I'll be long gone.
No, you're so much healthier than me right now.
I don't know, John.
Oh, dude, I literally have prayed a few times,
give me the health of Johnny.
God, don't let me have a heart attack before I start exercising again. You know what I'm saying? I'm not eating well. I'm eating badly.
Yeah.
and it's not good. So I'm not sleeping well. So it's fine. But see, how much am I contributing to the negative health by thinking like that?
It's interesting. You know what I'm saying? Don't they have studies about that kind of thing? Like people who think positively recover from diseases faster, et cetera?
I don't know. See, for a six, that's a horrible... It's like, yeah, you want me to change the way I'm wired and suddenly start thinking positively, you know? But that's kind of what the gospel does, though. Johnny, it does tell us ways to... I can choose positive today,
yeah,
and I do.
You can, count it all joy, and you can think on these things and all that kind of thing. Yeah, cast down every whatever.
Yeah, but see, I get... This is you're right. You're like coming into the fulcrum of where my struggles are right
all
now.
Right,
so
sure.
Welcome. Welcome to the fulcrum.
Yeah.
To think and speak positively at some point begins to sound... I'm not saying that it is. I'm telling you where my dark shadow side, shadow self. I read a thing this morning like, what we're really trying to do is to not live in the shadow self.
Yeah.
My shadow self goes, that's not realistic.
Yeah.
You're putting your head in the sand.
Uh-huh.
You're being inauthentic.
Okay.
It's disingenuous for you.
Right. You're almost living a lie if you live in positive with a positive. Like, look around. It's awful.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's kind of like when someone does something rude to me and then they just want to continue the interaction as if it didn't happen.
Yeah.
That's more offensive, than the rudeness to me. Like I
think the older I get, though, I am not, because I used to be that way. I'd be like, positive people, what are they doing? Now I'm like, I'm at least not suspicious of positive people. I admire it. Like, there's an old quote that says, when I was young, I admired clever people, and now when I'm old, I admire kind people. I think when I see somebody who's kind or positive or finds the good in things, I'm like, what do they know that I don't know? I'm not, like, immediately irritated by it like I used to be.
I'm irritated when a kind person hasn't, when, in my estimation, they've not actually taken in what's going on around them.
Okay, sure. Yeah,
If it's just like, la, 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 I don't watch the news, la, 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 I'm just happy.
Yeah, there used to be a bit about that. A friend of mine has a bit about that, about like when you go on a road trip with someone and you get like two flat tires and they go, well, this is an adventure. And you're like, no, it's not. It's awful.
Yeah, so speaking of my wife.
We're going to be murdered.
My wife, who's a better person than me in every sense of the word, you know this to be true.
Uh-huh.
She took me downtown for my birthday to this nice hotel called Dream Nashville.
Yeah.
So it's down right, literally it's in Printer's Alley. So kind of a cool spot of Nashville, restaurants all around. And we've never been, have you been to Fifth and Broad?
Yeah, a couple times, but not like to hang out. I've just been to the Apple store there and walked by and see all the hubbub.
We've never been through there, but it's like this huge development right across the street from Bridgestone.
Yeah.
Like multi-floors. I think there's 200 restaurants in there.
Yeah, it's bananas.
Shops everywhere. It's like...
You could stay there all day, every day for 7 days and still not do everything there.
It's like our tiny Times Square for Nashville.
Right,
in terms
it is.
Of, yeah, spot to go shop, eat, whatever. And I'm talking like, you can eat inside, outside, but the eating part of it, the three levels of eating, different restaurants, almost like a food court, but all the stuff's in the middle.
Uh-huh. And it's not a food court because everything's $1 million.
Oh, yeah. It's all the like high-priced
Nashville.
There's no corn
dog on a stick. Everything is like a $30 cheeseburger.
It's all the cool Nashville stuff, you know. And then there's stages everywhere where you can do the little, you know, artists can play and all this. Anyway, so then we went down yesterday after that and hung out. It was great. But the night of my birthday...
Uh-huh.
Like, we had this one umbrella, and we go out walking to, well, first of all, we went in, and we were already noticing the hotel, the restaurant in the hotel, that they were grossly understaffed.
Yeah.
And so we were like, this is not going to work out well if we eat here. So we found that there were reservations available on OpenTable for another restaurant really close. It has really good ratings. Okay. Nice Nashville. It's called Church and Union. Okay. And so, or is it Union and Church? I think it's Church and Union. And so we're literally at Church Street near Union. Like we're right there. So the name has to be, and it says we're like 300 feet away.
Yeah.
So we go out and start kind of walking around, check out Printer's Alley, and there's not a lot of people there, you know, but we're walking around and we're seeing it and we're like, well, let's go to the restaurant. It's probably time. So we walk to the restaurant and we can't find it. And so we begin to immediately, we discovered in New York, you know, sometimes we have T-Mobile. I'm not trying to dog T-Mobile.
They're not a sponsor, I'll say that.
I'm gonna tell you,
they will never be a sponsor.
They're going to have to really up their game if they want to be a sponsor, because their commercials are straight lies, as far as I can tell.
We would take their money if they want to be a sponsor, but behind their back, we're going to be dogging.
Like, if you work for T-Mobile and you're listening to this, I just want you to know.
You're part of the problem.
No, no, you're not. You're not putting up the
Rise
towers
up.
And stuff.
But, oh, sorry.
But I'm just going to tell you, as a customer, I could not be less happy with the service I have. I get service
Maybe there's somewhere that T-Mobile is, like, really powerful and the towers are good and we just have a bad situation. But I know Mount Juliet in particular is awful.
Mount Juliet and where I take my kid to school out.
I don't know how they sell phones, because we have a T-Mobile office, like a T-Mobile, like, sales center or whatever you want to call it, T-Mobile store. People go in there and you're firing up your new phone and you've got no service. I don't know how you walk out of there with that phone.
Yeah, which one was it that allows you to take the phone home for a few days and check it out? Maybe it's Verizon or somebody, because they're confident that you're going to be like, oh, I get great service. Like, I lose calls. I know where all the dead spots are, which I know is pretty normal for people. Like, but there's a lot. Often in my own house, I have to go to airplane.
When you have dead spots in your house, it's no good.
But sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wait, I have to now go to airplane mode and have it refind the tower again. I do that at least five times a day.
In
my own home. So anyway,
like
sorry.
An animal.
Sorry, guys. So we were kind of like, well, maybe T-Mobile's messing up on the walking directions with Google Maps and all that. Then, Johnny, the sky opens up and we have this one little umbrella.
Yeah. I can't believe you had an umbrella. I never have an umbrella.
We knew it was a possibility. And so I'm telling you, it just starts torrential downpour and we're walking with these two phones.
Yeah.
And she's like, and I can tell the umbrella's not big enough. It was kind of like Jack and...
Could you tell it wasn't big enough because your wife was soaked and you weren't?
No. It was the opposite.
You're like, hold on a minute.
It was like Jack and Rose. Yeah. Like, you know, at the end,
right.
He can't fit on the table. So
there's a door.
The door, sorry. So he allows her to be on there. Now, he probably should have tried more than once.
Yeah.
I always thought, you maybe should have tried more than once, Jack, before you just resigned yourself to a frozen, watery grave.
But I think they did that on MythBusters, where they tried to see if two people could have fit on that door. Because
they really?
It was a movie version of MythBusters.
So she's under there dry. I mean, just dry.
Right.
And I'm like, my head's dry, but the umbrella's making it worse. Like,
it's drizzle drips.
It is pouring down onto my shirt.
Yeah.
And she goes, just get under the umbrella. And I looked at her. It was like a Jack Rose moment. I go, honey, I don't know how to tell you this. This umbrella is not big enough for both of us. Yeah. I'm just going to get soaked. Let's just cross the street and try to find this restaurant. Like, it was a... And so she just...
And it was your birthday, of all things.
Well, yeah, but I'm not going to let her just get
you
soaked.
You sacrificed on your day.
I don't know if she... I think we were getting...
No, we all would have done that.
A little heated at that moment, like, trying to find her. You know, you're in this, but it... To your point is... And then we get to the restaurant, by the way. I'm standing in front, walking, like... And I realize, I look over at the door, and there's a menu on the door.
Yeah.
Johnny, there's no sign for this restaurant.
Oh, it's one of those, like a speakeasy.
There's no sign. It's not a speakeasy.
Oh.
I walk in, and the hostess, I'm a little perturbed.
Oh, boy.
Because I've just been soaked in the rain, and I go...
You're like, it's my birthday!
I said, do you guys have a sign?
Yeah.
For your restaurant? And she goes, oh, no. Most people, like... And she says these words to me.
Yeah.
We have this really interesting ceiling, and we're pretty much known by this artwork on the ceiling.
Inside.
But the ceiling, you could see it from the outside in the windows.
Oh,
where,
I see.
So I was like, you're known for your ceiling?
like you're the Sistine Chapel.
Like I'm walking around in a rainstorm in a restaurant I've ever been to. I live here, and you're telling me.
Yeah.
And I just.
You go, you're not known because I didn't know it.
Right. So.
Yeah.
But. Laura, the whole time, though, was like, I'm so sorry. It's your birthday. This is a disaster. And I really did, though. I was laughing. I was like,
yeah, no.
To your point,
when things go that wrong, you're like, yeah, it's fun.
And this is a great story. I said, I'll tell this in the podcast. This will be a great story. It really was an adventure. And we had a great night. So it was fine.
I don't know if it was a great story.
It wasn't a great story.
You know, it's, what are we, 190 episodes in, though? So.
But we got to come up with something.
It passes for great.
But I want to be that person, though, that goes, this is.
Right.
My dad was that person.
Yeah,
everything was an adventure.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because every car we had broke
I think
down.
You need that person. It's like that's the balance. Somehow you always end up with that person. If you have a happy, healthy family, you end up with that person. The other person kind of balances them out. If you have two like happy-go-lucky, like star-eyed, that's not necessarily good.
You know what's weird is I'm the guy that goes, we should have planned better. That's my way. Like if disaster strikes and we could have planned around it,
right.
Then I'm like, this frustrates me. I should have foreseen this. But
yeah,
when I was a youth pastor, it was like I expected unexpected things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd make an adventure with the kids out of it. Like, you know, the bus blows a tire in the middle of Alabama and you're on the side right. of the road and, hey kids, you know, like the last, for me though, was survival. If you let them start to mutiny yeah. in their attitude, then you'll never get this trip back.
Yeah.
So now we're going to, hey, everybody, remember the time we ordered pizzas to the rest area on the side of the interstate while we waited for someone to come replace the tire on the big bus? Because you can't just change a tire on a big bus.
Right.
It requires, you know. I mean, and like, it was like the kids' favorite memory.
Right.
Like that we had that, you know, or the time we were in the snowstorm going over the mountains trying to get to the ski trip that we could never get there. We pulled the guitars out and just started doing songs and stuff. And the kids enjoyed that more than the ski trip. Like they had that, you know, but truthfully, we were kind of in danger. Like it was, yeah. it was a bad storm and our bus driver Bubba was just like, you know, and we just started singing and you get those kinds of things. And I go, why can't I be that happy-go-lucky youth pastor type like yeah, for my daily life? Why am
yeah,
I like?
Maybe. Do you think it's like, do you think it really is wiring? Can we be happy-go-lucky? Can you make yourself a happy-go? I don't know. And I wonder like what my arc is. Like if I was to look at positivity in my life and my outgoing whatever and my how people view me, I wonder if it's a slope or if it's gone up
yeah.
or if it depends on like how my career's going. Or that would be really depressing if you felt that like everything's dependent on, you know,
yeah.
whether you're working or not or whether things are good. That would be really like sad to find out about yourself. We all kind of sense it like, well, I feel better when things are good, or I'm more likely to be smiling and happy if things are like going well.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
I don't want to be that guy. Yeah. I meet people that, I don't know. I think there is wiring. I think there is, and I hate to, I know that a lot of our topic centers around aging today, but I do think that the more evidence I have of negative things happening, I find myself falling more into cynicism, like just because I have the track record now.
Part of that like, too is I think it's like we want to be like we love being right. And so cynicism gives you the ability to be right if something goes wrong.
Yeah.
You can go, aha, I told you this was crap.
Yeah. Then, oh, yeah.
And then you get that feeling of like, even though things are crap, you still get to feel good about being right about them being uh-huh. crap, which is pride. It's just, it's, and you might have contributed by that to them being bad by also being so negative all the time.
Yeah. No,
like I'm adding to it.
You remember this from being at the staff table. I am the guy that when something goes bad that I go, hey, everybody, I told us we shouldn't have done this.
Oh, yeah.
I told you we should have done it this way.
People hate that guy.
Yeah. And I'll act like it's to stop us from doing it again. And sometimes it is. When we've done it five times in a row and
right,
it keeps blowing up and I keep,
to,
then I'm like, yeah. hey, everybody, I'm really
right,
upset
it's time
now.
To fire Johnny.
Like,
let's release
how many
him.
Times
he needs to just go on and do stand-up.
Are we going to let this happen?
This building is an atrocity.
But I just, that's funny. I don't know. I want to be the positive guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go even deeper into the layers.
Okay.
How much are the positive people creating positive circumstances through their positivity?
That if I knew that was happening, then I'd be more likely to try it.
Well, that's again, now if you sort of meld that
yeah.
with a lot of the religious things we were raised with, that's
yeah.
sort of the idea.
Right.
The positive
manifest
people
manifest destiny, or you speak it and you
right.
yeah,
power, we'll create
life and death and the power
yep.
of the tongue.
Yep.
Which can go completely off the rails too. If we know that, we've seen it.
You yeah,
know, we've seen it go off the rails, but I do believe, yeah. I think that's the thing, if it's hard to know. You know, you have a view that you have of yourself, and then you really, if you're honest with yourself, you go, how do other people view me as a positive person? I don't know. I don't know. I don't, I'm afraid to even ask the question, because probably not.
I think that people who are acquaintances or know me somewhat, like, as a pastor, but
yeah.
don't know me that well personally, consider uh-huh. me very positive.
Right.
And people who know me more intimately
yeah.
don't.
I wouldn't think that wouldn't be my first thing is to be like, is John positive or negative though?
Well, yeah, that's a pretty
that's a deep end of the thing. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I want it. Maybe I just want to want it.
But why do you want it?
I think I'd be better off. I think when I see somebody who's like I said, I used to feel like, oh, they've put their head in the sand. Now I look at like a positive person and I go, okay, what are they seem like they're getting more out of their life than I am.
I want to meet a person, and I don't mean to make this Enneagram related, but I really do. I want to meet someone who's wired like me, who's a positive person. That's okay. Who I'd receive all from. Right. When I meet someone who's just positive, I go, well, they're just wired differently. Uh-huh. And I'm okay with that now. Hey, we're all wired differently. I'm not trying to be like you. Like, Andrew's a seven. He can't remember the negative things sometimes.
Yeah.
He's so wired to avoid pain.
Yeah,
and it's and I love it about him.
Or to move forward, like some people just move forward, like the inertia of their lives, they leave failures behind so quickly. Like Bill Belichick's famously kind of a grouch in press conferences.
Yeah,
he gives these one word answers. He wants to give anything to the press that could help his the other teams. But he's famously like. If you ever get him one-on-one, he's actually kind of a jovial person. I've seen interviews with him, and he's kind of funny. And I've seen him, like, talk to students and stuff. And he's laughing, and you're just like, what's this guy's deal? But one of his most famous press conferences is, like, they got, like, shut out in a game a few years ago. And they kept asking him, like, what could you have done differently? What do you think happened? Do you think the defense just knew what you were bringing? And he goes, I don't know. It's just on to Cincinnati. On to Cincinnati became his thing, because that was the next opponent.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. We got mad at that because we wanted him to, like, own up to the failures.
Yeah.
But literally, like, he was like, I can't fix it now. I can only fix Cincinnati.
I think I lived that way early. You remember whenever I got fired from my first pastoral job and this job opened up, it felt very much like this is what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
Because there's a lot of weird things that happen.
Yeah. Felt like destiny.
Yeah. And I'll never forget we had some kids who helped us move. And we drove away and they were sitting on our doorstep at our old house crying.
Yeah.
And it was like it was too painful, I think, for me to process.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of I set my face towards the sun, kind of thing, and just was like, I'm going this way. This is where I know God wants me to go.
Right.
I didn't try to get fired. I didn't,
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like you, yeah.
Like, when I'm out of control, it's actually kind of a gift. Like,
yeah.
I forget who the quote is, but someone says, nothing so marvelously clears the mind than a lack of choices.
I said that.
I think that was Johnny W. who said.
No, you're right. It's the reverse of the quote that I've said before, which is anxiety is the dizziness of freedom.
Yeah.
So when we have a lot of choices, we have a lot of freedom, it can be a paralyzing thing.
Yep.
Instead of a freeing thing, because we're like, I could do the wrong thing. Whereas when you're broke, I remember even in the early stages of the pandemic, when all my shows dried up, there was something very galvanizing about pulling out a dry erase board and putting all my bills on it and going, we have no money coming in for 3 months.
Yeah.
This is what we owe. This is what we have. This is how much we have for groceries. Like, it was very sobering, but it was like my wife and I became a team more than we had in the months leading up to that moment.
Yeah.
We had no choices but to pull out our bills and look at them, whereas before we'd just been like cavalierly like, oh, whatever, we'll figure it out. More money will come in. When no money's coming in, now your choices dry up and you go, we have no choice but to clip coupons and figure this out.
Yeah. And there is something about, by the way, it was Henry Kissinger. The absence of alternatives clears the mind marvelously. So, okay. Sorry, I had adapted that in my mind. I think I like mine better.
Yeah. God, Kissinger.
That guy.
He hemmed and hawed over there.
But, I mean, you look at, again, let's not put rose-colored lenses on the Depression or World War II or the absolute just disaster and travesty of it all. But it is the moment where we call the greatest generation. It is the moment we look back and we make movies about.
They had to rise. They had to,
That adversity produced in them a response. And I think that's, if you compare to where we are now, the type of adversity that we're facing today, it doesn't have as clear of a response. There's a lot of responses. You could dive bomb into conspiracy and cynicism, even Christian conspiracy and cynicism. And you can rail against those things, and spend your life yelling and shouting and all those things. And both sides can do that. Even the actions are less clear. And there's a lot of studies about that in terms of the war on terror.
Right.
I mean, what is that? who is terror exactly?
Right. Whereas
to fight.
We knew when we're fighting the Nazis, it's like we're all against the Nazis, right? All right.
Right.
Well, then bring all your metal and we're going to melt it down into tanks or whatever.
Right. And build this calf. Wait, no, that's another story.
That's
sorry.
That's a different one. anyway, all that said, if you want to have more great fun like this, go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com. All of our episodes are archived. Mm. And you can also check out our Patreon page. There's links to my social media. My website's linked there. John has a new book that's been out a while, but go to that notsoblackandwhitebook.com and you can leave an Amazon review. 5 stars, please.
That'd be great. Yeah. Or a rating, even if you will.
Oh, a rating.
Yeah. We've had quite a few ratings and reviews in the last.
Rate it, review it. It helps people find the book, and it's an important book right now. And, that'd be great if you did that. And I think we're up to, 190 episodes?
This will be 191, I think.
We're getting close to that 200th episode. Have we pulled the trigger on whether we're going to do the live?
Number one, I need you to change
that. That's 9 weeks, right?
I think, I'm offended by pull the trigger. I think you should find a better.
9 weeks, you're offended by it? 9 weeks away.
Yeah, it's coming up.
We're going to pull the ripcord? That means you're kind of bailing out of it.
We're going to pop the can? I don't know.
What is that? Pop the top?
Pop the top of a can, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Just stay tuned on that. There's so many other changes coming. It's hard to know.
I think you're afraid to overpromise and underdeliver.
Johnny, that's because we do that a lot.
Yeah, you're right.
So, I don't...
But we're pretty faithful to do these.
You know what? I don't know. We do get in here.
We should get some kudos for our consistency.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what people should be like, if you think this just happens, I mean, we got to drive all
the way.
Get off
our back, guys. Oh, I'm sorry. We lashed out in anger, and I apologize.
Yeah, continue to pay attention to the things. We will be, hopefully in the next few weeks at least, we're going to be, there was a funny joke that we made on accident about Norman Conquistador and our good friend Aaron.
Oh, yeah.
Drew a cartoon about it.
And he drew a character, the Norman Conquistador.
And it was
Norman Conquistador.
So funny. Thank you, Aaron, for that. We'll be tweeting that out here.
We should wait till we do the video, and it could just be hanging up behind us.
That's true. I do have another Aaron original up here of Smokey Dog on my desk right now.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he did that.
Ordered some of his artwork, and he sent me that. This is an extra. What a great guy.
We need to link him in the show notes.
Yeah, we do. We need some show notes.
We do. I'll put it on the descript.
Yeah. Johnny does a great job on our description, by the way. You know, you get it at the beginning of every show, but that's a good way to get your friends to listen to the show because those in and of themselves are enjoyable. And Johnny, I applaud you.
Thank you, John.
For your great work on the description of the show. So,
it's not even my birthday.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you for the time you spent with us today. We hope you enjoyed it. Hope you have a happy new year. We'll see you next week on
Talk About That.
Everyone wants to change the world. Capital Ministries is doing just that, one heart at a time by creating disciples of Jesus Christ among political leaders in the U.S. and foreign nations. For more than 25 years, founder Ralph Drollinger has written Bible studies specifically for public servants. Study along with us and learn what the Bible says about capitalism, communism, abortion, same-sex marriage, and other contemporary issues. Subscribe and follow us at lifeaudio.com or search Capital Ministries on your favorite podcast platform.